Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Whittaker.
Welcome to Parents in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice, and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. Hello, you're listening to Parents in Hell with...
Margot, can you say Rob?
What?
Beckett.
Beckett.
Can you say Josh?
And car.
What?
Car?
No, can you say Josh?
Yeah.
Go on then, say Josh.
Josh.
Where'd you go?
There we go. Hi, Rob and Josh. This is my almost three-year-old daughter, Margot, having a go at saying your names.
She's from Essex or East London.
Not far off.
Kent.
Walkington stroke Bromley.
Margot.
Yeah, you're neck of the woods.
It sounded like Rise of the Foot Soldier.
They live Margot. In Dunstable, but they're originally from Walkington stroke Bromley.
Yeah.
We've used your names as practice for some time now to help a mild speech delay.
Okay.
I'd say she's done all right. Love the podcast. Thank you for taking the pressure off having to be a perfect parent. All the best, Amy and Margot from Dunstable.
AKA, you two are shit at it. Makes me feel better. Josh, how are you? I feel like, have you been busy?
I'm so tired. I'm fine. I've been busy. It's that thing of, and you'll know this, Rob, when you're working away, you come back and you want to parent and see your children. That's what you come back.
Yeah.
And so you just don't get a break. Because you just get back.
You're either working or looking after the kids.
I've got this afternoon off, Rob.
Okay.
And then the next time I've got off, just to myself, is 18 days' time.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's just called being a parent, I think.
I know.
And I think that's what you're right. I think that the issue you're having is you're assuming there will be days off, but there just aren't.
Well, I thought when they went back to school, Rob.
Do you know what I've done? I've accepted my fate now and I've learned to relax when I'm with them.
Yeah, no, me too. Chilling out.
Chilling out. It's 18 days until I'm alone.
It's the call.
I have too, mate. Yeah, absolutely.
I am chilled out when I'm with them. It's when I'm not with them. It's that's when the lack of chill comes in.
Right, okay. But then you're moaning about being with me as soon as you come back from
moaning.
Work.
No, I'm not moaning. I'm just telling you I'm just telling you why I'm tired.
Oh, that's why you're tired. Oh, so it's not you're not enjoying it. You're just saying you're tired.
This is the misconception about this podcast. We're not moaning about our kids. We're moaning about the fact we're really trying and it's difficult.
Well, also, as well, I'd say your son's at a very labour-intensive age. Because can I tell you what happened to me this morning, Josh?
What?
It was 6:30 a.m., about the time I get up, and I heard my seven-year-old from downstairs saying, "Don't worry, Dad, I've let the dogs out for a wee." And I thought, you know what?
Oh, my God.
I fucking made it. I can smell the finish line.
So don't you give me fucking... That's parenting. You're always on, mate. Don't you fucking give me that. What are you doing this afternoon? Because last week, you sent me a picture of yourself in a hammock.
That's because I live in zone 6, baby.
No,
you
it's because
hammock.
I'm not having a go at your hammock.
No, I'm just saying, like, move out, baby. A bit more space, chill out.
Rob, it wouldn't help. I'm working. Or parent.
If anything, more space for your son to run
through. My issue isn't that I haven't got room for a hammock until 18 days' time.
A bigger garden. You can afford a bigger garden.
About the hammock.
You can choose to be a bus journey away from a tube where you are. In the hubbub of a cosmopolitan city.
I'm not talking about where I live, Rob. That's neither here nor there. That wasn't the reference to your ability to source a hammock.
I'd finish work and come home. Lou took the girl somewhere that didn't involve me, and I come home and she was just gone. So I was just laying in a hammock and just thought, this is living.
Yeah, I know. Fair play. What it is, the reason is, I've done summer holiday.
Yes.
Yeah, which I'd say was... 50% success.
Yes.
And then we've gone straight from summer holiday to the 1 month of the year, which is absolutely obscene for the amount of work I'm doing.
Right. Okay. So this is a peak period. So this is actually podcast gold we're heading into now. This is a real test of your new mental attitude, the way you're dealing with stress and workload.
Well, the problem is you can kind of in our job go, I'm just going to cut down on work. I'm just going to do these things, but things get scheduled so that you have group. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Filming, you can't go, excuse me, Channel 4, can you change your TV schedule? Because I want to look after my mental health a little bit, so I'm only going to do 20 hours a week. It comes in groups. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the way the work comes in. So when does it come down for you? Is it because we're doing a big thing in October?
No, but that's all right.
That's okay. So September's the busy time.
September's the busy time.
See, I don't know if this is the beginning of a new career for me or the end of my career, Josh, but we're doing a show and I've got 2 weeks off in the middle.
Yeah.
And I just booked that off ages ago for some family stuff and just booked 2 weeks off. And the TV people said, so in that time, because it's right in the middle of the whole filming schedule, but in that time, if we send you emails, will you be able to read them and report back? And I just went, no. No. And I was like, because I've got to protect that time or I will go mad. But now the proof will be in the pudding. I'm not invited back. So in about 6 months, I'll be able to let you know if this new approach to work's a good idea.
Yeah.
Or it really does impact the financials.
Yeah.
Guys, I'm prioritizing my mental health, but I'm also not prioritizing income.
Yeah.
So that, you know, but I'll let you know how I get on. But that's my new
approach.
Okay,
I'll let you know.
Yeah.
I'll let you know.
But you're all right, though. Apart from that, you've just been busy, Josh.
Yeah, it's been fine. Back at school, etc. I was sad because I was away filming for the first day, and that felt really. I didn't like that at all.
Well, yeah. Well, it wasn't her first. It was her. She's done her first year, It wasn't. Yeah, I don't think you can miss the first reception. But yeah, I was like that. I was supposed to be working. Well, I was working, but I just went in half an hour late so I could take them in because I just sort of forgot that was the day. But it does feel like you should take them in. But they're only like year one and year three now. So it doesn't really matter, but it does feel a bit like it would be nice to take them in.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's weird, isn't it? Because you feel like it's a big thing. Like, I haven't met a new teacher yet properly. Do you know what I mean? It's that kind of, you feel a bit like you're like, oh, God, am I a bad dad?
Well, do they do like curriculum evenings where they invite you in and they sort of
I'm dropping off tomorrow. I'm fine.
No, but they do a thing, right, where it's like a curriculum evening where they basically invite you in and go, right, this is what we're going to teach the kids this year, basically. Oh, and it's like a little, and it's a chance for the parents to meet each other and stuff like that. I just said to Lou, I'm not expecting you to go, but I'm not going. So I don't want to put any pressure on you, like you have to, as if you, like, you know,
did
whatever.
You use the words protecting my mental health again?
Look, guys, I am just protecting my mental health. Lovely. Yep, the wedding invite looks great, but I'm protecting. Yeah, of course, I love your child. Want to be at the christening. I'm just protecting my mental health's better if I don't go to your kid's fucking christening and I sit and watch football all day, okay? So why don't you shove that out of the fucking chapel? Because I'm protecting my mental health, okay? So why don't you back off? Where's the line between protecting your mental health and doing whatever you want all the time and being quite rude?
I don't know, there's got to be a point at which you go, can you take the bins out? I'm so sorry, but I'm protecting my mental health and that will smell.
And my brain doesn't like bad smells.
No, so exactly.
We've got to look after numero uno at the moment because once I'm happy, everyone else is happy. That's the way I look at it. Yeah, there is a bit of a balance.
In conclusion.
Yeah, in conclusion.
Can't push it too far.
In conclusion, me and Lou have had a conversation where she thinks I might be turned into a sociopath. But I just think that's just a young guy protecting his mental health. That's all.
So is Lou going?
Yes, but she's interested in that kind of thing and she likes meeting up with all the parents and stuff. And she was a teacher, so that is a bit more her wheelhouse.
You'll be at home in full protection mode.
No, I'm going to get the...
Well, in the mental health hazmat suit.
Kids, if I cook you dinner tonight, it will have an impact on my mental health. So if you could just have another bowl of cereal, thank you very much.
Do write in if you've used the excuse protecting my mental health for the what events have you got out of by saying
protecting. That's a great one. When have you used that the mental health card to get out something you just didn't want to go to? That made me laugh the other day. My kids went to me Someone said to him, like, Daddy, why do they want to have a photo of you? Because they're noticing the photos a lot now when we're out and about. Why do I have photos of you? I went, oh, because I do shows. And they went, oh, do you find it annoying? I went, well, no, not really. No, it's, you know, it's nice when people are nice. If they're a bit rude, it's not that nice. And I said, but when I'm with you, I prefer to be chatting to you, not chatting to other people. Because, you know, I don't, you're at school a lot and stuff. And they went, why do they do it? I went, oh, because they see my shows. And then my daughter went, well, if you don't like it, stop doing the shows. I was like, yeah, fair point, actually. That's it.
Let me talk you through economics.
Okay, we had this chat on holiday, and I went, let me sit you down and give you some fucking home truths. the other thing, I think my daughter said to me the other day, you know, they come and whisper things in your ear sometimes. Mm. Do your kids ever do that, like at the part of the game, whatever? She ran up to me, and I was sat on the sofa, and she just whispered in my ear, you're so weak. And it was awful. It actually felt like, you know, like the bad voice in your head. It was like that came alive, and it was my own child. You're so, what thing to say into someone's ear? You're so weak.
What was it for? Do you know why she said it?
No, I was just sat down having a drink, but I don't know why. I don't know if she's heard it on something or whatever. Yeah. Or it's a weird thing to say.
Maybe you are weak.
Well, no, don't start getting in my head now.
Maybe that is. Maybe she was just kind of looked at you and thought, "He's a weak man."
He's a pathetic. My neighbour helped me. I sort of watched him do it.
This is pathetic. This is already pathetic. Well, this is fucking lame.
I had a wasp's nest in my house, in the roof.
In your house?
Well, out.
Don't get that in zone two.
It wasn't in the house. It was like on the roof. It was going through a little, on the house, on the crack. So none of the wasps were in the house, but they were in like under the guttering and stuff like that, in a little hole they were going through. And you could see them buzzing around. There's always like 10 wasps around this little hole. And then I rang up Rentokil, right? Guess how much for someone to come around and spray? Basically, they spray a bit of killer stuff to go on the wasps and it kills the nest.
I wouldn't even know where to start with that. A couple hundred beans?
Look, yeah, I thought maybe tops £200. £350 plus VAT, you pay up front, and if they come around your house and they can't reach it, it's £100 call out.
Oh, that's annoying.
Come on, mate. And I went, you know what? I think that's a little bit overpriced. No, thank you. And I put the phone down and I just thought to myself, I've got no idea how I'll get rid of this wasp nest now.
Yeah,
I've got nothing.
They've got you over a barrel, really.
Exactly. So anyway, I was driving back and I literally saw my neighbour with a massive pole with a little, like, lance thing on the end and a big pump thing. I went, what's that, mate? He went, oh, there's wasp nest around the back. I'm just getting rid of it. I went,
oh, my God.
Hold on. I'll get them now and again, and then they charge a fortune. But all it is they spray this in it. I found out what they used. So me and him, pump, 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 done a wasp nest.
Blimey, did it work?
Yeah, I mean, what I say we, I held the ladder as he climbed up onto a wall and then he pumped it.
And is it gone?
Yeah.
Wow.
Josh, I've spoken for too long. Should we bring on a guest? Richard Osman, the main event, Josh. Big guy, big dog. He's here.
We've wanted him for ages.
Yeah, we've wanted him for ages. He refused to do it online because he doesn't have a laptop, apparently, but he's written about 15 books. And we got him in Soho in a studio and we spoke to him.
What a great guy.
Camera's off. Mic's on.
Oh, his book's out.
Mano to Mano to Mano. And recorded by Mano. But quite man heavy, actually, but that was an accident. That's just sort of the way it's fallen. Here's Richard Osman.
Hello, Richard Osman.
Hello, Josh Widdicombe. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
And who is this gentleman?
Hi, Rob here. I'm Josh's assistant. Oh, I take notes.
Work experience.
Pretty much.
Yeah, lovely.
We're doing it in person, Richard, which is exciting.
It's much more fun doing it in person, I think.
I don't know, because I find it weird. I like it.
He doesn't like being in the room with us, Josh.
No. I love being in the room with you, but for a podcast...
Tell your face, mate.
I haven't got a face for telly. No, but I think sometimes, not in person, I don't even like the camera on, really. I'm experiencing what the person's saying the same way as the listener. So if you listen to this as a punter, just as a general listener, you don't see each other's faces and what they're doing.
Well, do you want to close your eyes?
I can close my eyes.
Do you want to just close your eyes?
Yeah, okay. How's that for you, though? Because I'm just sat with my eyes shut.
That's
my mum warned me about this. A basement in Soho.
Just slip this mask on, Rob, would you?
And just pop my trousers down, Richard. Okay. But we're very excited to have you.
I've wanted to have you on the podcast for years.
Really? I didn't know what you'd done. Should have asked.
We did, but you said in person it was locked down.
Oh, okay.
At one point I messaged you and you said you didn't have a laptop, which I just thought was fucking mental. You said I didn't have a laptop with the internet on or something.
No, I think I don't like doing podcasts at home, so I'd always say, oh, I don't have the tech.
Yeah, I know, but that's weirder than that's just annoying. Say I don't like... if you said I don't like doing podcasts at home.
No, but people take offence then because they go. No, but people go. Yeah, but ours though. Ours is quite a fun one.
Yeah. We've never said that.
Good. Or they'll say, all we need you to do is think of 14 things. You have to think of.
What's your guilty pleasure? Nothing. Yeah. You shouldn't be judged on what you like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then that sort of kills the mood.
What's your perfect Sunday? Not thinking of this stuff.
I'm a zero prep guy. That's my dream.
Yeah.
Are you the same?
Yeah, I am really. Usually the first thing I say is going to be the best thing you're going to get out of me, by and large. The more prep I do.
So you're a briefing call guy when you do a panel show?
Yeah.
Last leg or something. If they call you up and briefing call you,
I'm all right.
Do you refuse it?
No, I don't refuse it. Of course not. No. It's always good to talk to people.
And it's calms the producers down.
Yeah. Do you know what? Mm. That's always the thing. Producers, you know the thing when...
Bloody producers, eh? Bloody producers. Now you're on the other side.
I always remember when... Yeah, honestly, what is their problem? I always remember whenever a young comic starts getting big, and you boys both went through this, you'll get booked on shows. One of the big things is they send you a car.
Yeah.
And every young comic is like, oh my God, I've made it. Like, they sent me a car because I'm pretty big time now. And the truth is, a producer doesn't send you a car because you're big time. A producer sends you a car because they need to know where you are. It's essentially like having a bug. Because they don't trust you. They know you're an idiot. They tell you to turn up to the studio 2 hours early because they know you're going to be two hours late.
Yeah.
And they need to know that you're in a car and the person who's driving that car can ring them. Yeah. That's all they need.
And also, they know when you've been picked up. And a bit of a... backstage from the last leg. For years, Alex Brooker didn't know that. So he was giving his excuses for being late.
No.
Not knowing...
That the cab driver said he's only got in...
They had a record of when he was getting in the car. Didn't show up. Sorry, guys, the car was late. And they're like...
Oh, Alex.
He should know by now, shouldn't he?
He does know by now.
Well, he certainly knows now.
He certainly knows now.
That's for sure.
No, he doesn't listen.
He's very good, Alex Brooker, isn't he?
He's great.
He's my favourite on that show.
Yeah, I mean, because you need one comedian.
Yeah, exactly.
He's otherwise, it's just two journalists.
Yeah,
he melds
it together.
Yeah, like you did, because Adam's whole, like, quite a tough job, live show.
Yeah, yeah.
Holding it all together, the script like that.
Job.
Then you've got the sort of news anchor person, whatever you do. And then funnies with Brooker.
I was watching one the other night, was it Mel B was on?
Yeah.
It was a new record for, you can always tell when Alex has got a joke, right? So I'm going to say something. It's like, but Mel B, who's not used to working with comics, maybe, she talked so much. I think he did six. Oh, it's like when. God bless him, he's still got it out.
Say one about
Come
Brooker.
On, Mel!
I was really counting. I was like, what's Brooker got here? He's got something about the thing that Adam said about 2.5 minutes ago now.
And it must be good, because it's such a big gap now.
Yeah. Poor old Mel B. I'd say you and Alex Brooker fall into the same pool, which is people that you book... not as comedians, but they're as good as comedians.
Yes.
So you'd book them on A League of Their Own or Last Leg or something.
I've always been lucky like that because, by and large, when people watch you on things, if you boys are on something, they go, go on then, make me laugh.
Because it's your
job. Whereas with me, they're like, oh, why is it this, the guy from Pointless is on this show?
Yeah.
So as soon as you do a joke, they're like, oh, my God, this guy... You've seen the guy, he doesn't do jokes, he just did a joke.
Yeah, I bet John Grisham's not this funny.
Yeah. So it's like, all I have to be is funnier than John Grisham, whereas you have to be funnier than Steve Martin.
I know, it's hard, isn't it?
Hardest job in the world, Rob, isn't it?
Toughest job in the world.
Toughest job in the world.
A doctor, actually, both nurses and doctors, that'd be bloody hell.
Yeah. No, comedian, then doctor, then novelist.
Well, that's what I think. So you are an author now.
Yes,
I am. Officially, a really successful one. There's probably a stat backing up the most successful one ever or something.
But
more than Donaldson?
Excuse me?
More than Julia Donaldson?
Julia Donaldson she's got a long back catalogue.
Great answer.
Great answer.
She sells,
but pound for pound.
She's still selling Gruffalo's.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, not personally.
She wrote that a long time ago. It's done. Yeah. Done years ago. And like every week, just the money just keeps running in for Donaldson. And the guy who did the pictures.
I mean,
Axel Scheffler.
I think that Donaldson, like, obviously she wrote the Gruffalo, but who drew the Gruffalo? Yeah.
Axel Scheffler.
I know, but he still doesn't get enough respect. I didn't even know his name.
They
50-50 it.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah, that's... I was going to call them the drawers.
Put me off writing a picture.
Not
book.
Drawers. Like,
no, no. Artists.
Illustrators.
Not drawers.
I shouldn't be the vocab man in the room.
Yeah, Scheffler is... Oh, he's raking it in. Don't you worry about Scheffler.
Oh, Scheffels.
Oh, yeah. If you went to Scheffels' house, you'd take you a long time
Donaldson
to find a loop.
Lives in quite a small house.
No, she doesn't.
She does.
No.
Isn't that one of her books?
You know?
Because...
Donaldson lives
There's
in
a cow
very
in there?
Small house. She opens the door.
There is that story
She opens the window.
Well, that's true. What's that book?
What, Donaldson's book, Room on the Broom?
No, not that one. There's one about a house where there's not enough room in the room or something.
Is there?
Was it not just an email to her estate agent?
Sheffield.
She does live in a small house somewhere.
No way.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. Oh,
let's talk about your empire, Osman. Mm-hmm. What you got?
We've got places. None of your business.
We got locked. You're fucking loaded.
Listen, no, listen, yeah. Honestly, listen, we're on a parenting podcast. My left home. I don't need the space anymore.
Oh, right.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
And that's a producer.
That's a segue. No, what is this? Someone trying to get evasive about how big their house is. That's what that is. You don't give a fuck about this show. You just want to flog your new book. What's it called?
Last Devil to Die.
September the 14th. The fourth in the series.
The fourth in the Thursday Murder Club series. People seem to be loving it, which is lovely.
You've got two kids.
I do, yeah.
How old now?
They are 25 and 23, just coming up to 23.
How often do you hear from a 25 and a 23-year-old?
I mean, I would say enough. No, it's interesting that, because sometimes you think, oh, I haven't heard from them in a little while. Is that bad parenting on my part? Or is it bad childrening on their part? And then I think back to when I was 25, how often I talked to my mum.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Maybe like once a month.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we didn't have email back in those days.
Yeah.
And I just thought, and that seemed to work out all right. I still love her. She still loves me.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's okay. So you have to slightly go, oh, it's okay that there'll be a few days go by and you haven't spoken to them or messaged them. But yeah, no, I hear from them a lot, which is lovely. And one of them's just around the corner from us, which is good. But no, it's honestly, it's great. I love that they're out there in the world. I love that they're self-funding.
They're not like looking at the book charts going, Dad.
Yeah, come on, mate. Come on, come on mate. Do us come a favour.
You've seen what Julie Donaldson's kid's driving around?
Yeah. I say, yeah, you've seen the house she lives in, though? Come on. Come on, mate. No, it's great. You know, I did your live show, and the one thing I felt I could pass along to that audience, because they look knackered.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, listen, they were making noise, but a lot of it was sort of, you know, what? Huh?
Yeah. It's a tough gig, because everyone in that room wants to go to bed.
Oh, they're deep down. I tell you, Manford is the only person I've seen start his show with, just so you know, we'll be done by 9:45.
Yeah.
Do you know what? And he's right to do it because TV shows, you always know when they're finished.
Yes,
but
yeah.
You go and see live shows like theatre sometimes.
Oh,
you
hate
have to look it.
It
up and just go, 3 hours?
Oh, my God. That's why I've never go to Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, no, I never would.
No,
I never would.
No, thank you.
It's too long.
Yeah.
Do 45 minutes.
Oh, and he would love it, wouldn't he? If he did. I'd never go over 10 p.m. with my shows, my tour shows. It's too much.
Start at 9:30, don't you?
Yeah. Quarter to 10 sometimes. <for me>. Like, 15 minutes of gold, everyone goes, no.
That's why I love Edinburgh, because it's an hour. And that's about the amount of time you should watch someone.
Yes, I agree.
I think maybe, you know, a little interval or something. But yeah, where did we get onto this?
You were talking to the crowd. Obviously, they had younger kids, a lot of the audience.
Yes,
Parenting Hell Live.
Yes,
but yeah, some of your advice was quite
I was saying that because it's hard with young kids, and it really is hard. So people are feeling bad about themselves. Really don't. There's very few harder things psychologically, emotionally, and just physically than bringing up kids, especially if you've got a few of them or if you're doing it by yourself. But people always say, never ends, though. Honestly, it never ends. Once you've got them, that's it forever. It's just, listen, it changes, but it's always as hard. And that's absolute bullshit. It gets so much easier at pretty much every turn. You know, when you go to school, it gets a bit easier, but then you've got, I've got to do nativity plays. And
there's a bit of admin and they've got swimming, picking up.
Day and all of that kind of stuff. But yeah, as soon as they're old and they just hang out with their mates, and you're like...
But even school is easy. Like, you're going, all right, so I've got to do a school run and then I'm up against it and then maybe I'll have to work this evening. But then when they go to sleep tonight, they're asleep.
Yeah,
yeah.
Why do they wake up every 2 hours?
Yeah,
like,
that
makes
is
going
so
for
tough.
At the moment with babies.
Because it gets to the point where your kids start waking up at midday because they're teenagers, or they get up at like 2 p.m. And there's a certain type of parent, of course, who's like, no, we must wake them up because we've got to go hiking. But if you're not that sort of parent, and I am not, you look at your watch, you go, it's 2 p.m. I've watched the Saturday lunchtime football game.
Oh, dream!
Already. And he's not even awake yet.
You know? Great. It makes me feel better about myself if someone's still asleep. Like, I'm like, right, I'm getting stuff done.
Yeah, and also you're the protector of the house.
Yeah.
You know, people are sleeping upstairs. If someone were to burst in, you're there.
Yeah, unless it's a really good bit of football.
Oh, yeah, then he's upstairs.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then they leave. And of course that has some sadnesses to it. But also, I'm struggling to think of one. But Did you cry when you dropped them at uni? That's a very, very good question. Yeah, uni is an interesting one because that's the first time you. It's like a soft launch.
Yeah, you know.
Like when a restaurant has a soft launch and it's cheaper.
Yeah.
You sort of get to get over some of that stuff. But when they're at uni and then you remember you're at uni or starting your first job and you think that's life. They're finding life. They're enjoying life. They're meeting people. They're doing interesting things.
And learning. You can only learn from doing it yourself, making mistakes.
Exactly.
You think, don't do that or where that will go there. That's not. But they have to learn themselves.
And if you're a parent who micromanages, then I guess it would be an issue. But you mustn't micromanage kids because they're going to end up doing the thing that they want to do.
I have quite a laid-back attitude to kids, and like with screen time and stuff like that.
I've taken this with me since we did the live show.
Good. Yeah. Well, like people go, honestly, they're on their iPads all day. Or they're like, you think, good. Yeah, that's fine. The money that's been spent on entertainment for those kids and everything on the internet, the entire knowledge of the entire world is there. When I grew up, we had 3 TV channels, and that was brilliant.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But they got everything. Of course, let kids watch stuff. I grew up watching telly, and that's what my job was in the end. So long as they're actively watching, so long as they're interested, so long as they're asking questions.
You don't put like a child in a like high chair with this telly on and it can't escape. You know, like, when they're older and they either actively can choose it.
Yeah. Yeah. If they want to watch Peppa Pig, great. What a great thing to watch. It seems fun. Xander Armstrong does one of the voices, doesn't he?
Of course he does. Of course he does. He'll go hiking. Yeah. Get up, kids.
No, you wouldn't go hiking.
Doesn't he go hiking?
Well, if he goes hiking, it would be for a Channel 5 documentary.
Of course, yes, absolutely.
He doesn't go hiking without getting paid for hiking.
Yeah. Monetize your hobbies, that's what I'd say.
There's never an edition of when we used to film Pointless, he would always have to wish about 100 kids happy birthday in the daddy dog voice.
Someone goes,
I'm really sorry, I couldn't possibly impose. And you know they were going to ask him to do daddy dog.
Oh,
and he loves it, he turns it on.
Does he?
Daddy dog from Peppa Pig.
Yeah.
But because he also does Hey Dougie.
Yes, he does Hey Dougie as well.
But the dog from Peppa Pig, he gets that more.
Oh, I don't know. He does Hey Dougie. It's just a voice. It's after my time.
It's a dog voice.
I was Teletubbies and Tweenies when my kids were.
Well, the Teletubbies had kids.
You say the Teletubbies had kids, are you asking?
Yeah, they have.
No, they haven't.
So in the new series, it's still on telly.
That's what was in their tummy.
Yeah, basically.
What? So there's little
tubbies? They've got little
tubbies. Yeah, the ones that we used to watch.
Yeah. Poe, Lala.
Yeah, I've got little ones.
Wow.
In the house, in the weird little mound house.
You're kidding me?
On my life, yeah.
Like little babies, what are they called?
Yeah, they're well cute.
What are they called?
I don't know. I've not been watching it.
If your parents had called you Tinky Winky, what would you call your kids? That's the question, isn't it?
Oh.
Because it can't be fun going
Tinky
through
Winky
life being
Junior?
Called Tinky Winky.
What are the Teletubbies babies called? Here we go. The Tiddly Tubbies.
Oh, yeah. It's like Astro Juniors, isn't it?
Yeah, so one's called Frankie Bridge. One's called Una
Healy.
Yeah.
They're all married to footballers.
So the Tiddly Tubbies are baby Teletubbies appearing in the revival series. Their names are Mimi, Dada, Ba, Ping, Ruru, Nin, Duggle D, and Umby Pumby.
That's a lot of kids. Do we know who are the parents? Who impregnated them? Wow.
Yeah. Well, I suppose they might breed in a different way because they're
Teletubbies.
Yeah.
Teletubbies, maybe, yeah.
I mean, looking back, they should have done them as kids to start with. They're way cuter.
That is cuter.
Oh, yeah, that is nice. Would you ever,
would I ever have sex with a Teletubby?
Would you ever have
Josh,
sex with a Teletubby?
Come on, mate.
It's not that kind of podcast. There are podcasts where
I think I've come closest to having sex with a Teletubby.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because when me and Lou started dating, Lou went to a fancy dress party as a Teletubby.
No.
And then came back to mine that night.
But the
uniform came off.
But you didn't,
I didn't
tell you.
Keep the
didn't
end
have
on.
Sex till you got married.
Oh, yeah, of course, as well. Yeah. But the green one, what was the green one?
Dipsy. Yeah.
Would you ever, successful TV producer,
Dipsy,
successful
Dipsy.
Writer, would you ever go into children's television or writing?
No, I don't think that I would. You get an awful lot of people go, I just used to tell this story to my kid, and I just thought, it's absolute nonsense as well.
Yeah.
Either A, it's a lie, which is fine, because you've got to sell books, or B, if you're any sort of performer, the second you start saying to your kid, there was a land far away, the Noggin Noggs and the Biggin Bigs were fighting each other. They know from second one, they think, there's something in this.
You
know, the kids go, but Daddy, what happened? It's no, shh, 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 I'm just writing this down.
You bath them.
Yeah. You're literally fixing their agent as they're kind of going, and the Noggin Noggs were so afraid because the custard monster was coming. Yeah. Oh, yeah, custard monster. That's
just Google custard monster to see if there's one already because I've got a great idea.
Exactly, yeah. No, I don't think that's for me.
No.
You know, I don't think so. Listen, one day I might do, but...
Do your kids, have they read your books?
One of them has, one of them hasn't. One of them never will, because he has no interest in ever reading any book ever, unless it's like a Guide to Legend of Zelda. The other one has read them, so that's nice. It keeps me grounded.
Yeah.
She hates them.
But she's read them.
Did you give them the books with a lovely message in the...
Yeah, the first one is dedicated to them.
Nice.
Which is nice, to the two of them. They always get a thanks at the back.
it has to be, but what does it mean, really?
Yeah.
Basically, it's worse if you don't.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you do, it's sort of like, well, yeah, that's standard. I mean, what I did it in our books, you sort of just have to.
Yeah, well, I'm on book four now, and you quickly run out of people.
Well, we're sat here.
That's what about to the loyal reader? To you, reader.
Loyal reader. Oh, that's cool. Can you imagine? I mean, literally, people puking before they'd even start reading.
Yeah.
They go, you know what? Don't dedicate it to me. Let's give me some of the royalties.
This book's dedicated to your ex-girlfriend.
Exactly. Lovely.
Did you ever consider doing the voice for the audiobook?
Oh, my God, no. My book's the sort of main narrator is an 80-year-old woman.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I have the range.
Did you try the voice?
Of course not, because Leslie Manville said yes.
Yeah.
To do it. And Leslie Manville's one of the greatest actors ever.
Yeah, but did you figure that maybe?
And now Fiona Shaw does it.
Yeah.
No, of course. I mean, well, I'll tell you what.
No, but you not at home, did you not, when they messaged about it, did you think, I could probably give it a go?
No. It feels to me like.
No.
Listen, you practiced the voice, didn't you?
If I had insisted, they probably would have had to say yes.
Yeah.
But you know, whenever authors say, yeah, I'm doing my audio, but you think, why would you do that? That must take so long.
Oh,
it's like reading a book out loud, and they're really, really long in like a tiny studio somewhere, and you've got to do all the accents, and you like
that Caribbean character. That was a mistake.
That was a mistake. You know what? It was okay to write, but not to read. And also, you got to read your stuff, and at that point, it's done. You can't change anything. So, like, you do a sentence where you go, "Oh, that's clumsy," and
you can't
do it. So. I cannot understand that, given that they will employ someone to do it for you.
Yeah. Yes.
Did you pop your head in?
Literally, Fiona Shaw has just finished doing the fourth one, and I'm filming something with her tomorrow.
Nice.
Yeah, a little extra, and we're recording a little audio thing for the end of the book as well. And she's great, and she rings up and goes, I have a question about this. I just say, oh, this is lovely.
Oh, nice.
Takes it very seriously, and she does it brilliantly. Yeah, you don't need me going, it was a sunny day. Come on.
Did your children... Because your children would have been... early teenagers when you came on TV?
They were a little bit younger than that. So I started on TV probably 2010, something like that. So they were kind of 10 and 12. Yeah, so not a million miles off that.
If people don't know, you were... I've never heard this from you, actually.
Okay.
The story of Pointless is that you sat in to the run-through.
Yes.
And they were going to get someone else to do it. Yeah. And then the people said, no, get this guy.
As you know, like quizzes and things like that, you can't set them off a bit of paper because you start explaining the rules to any quiz and immediately it sounds incomprehensible.
Yeah.
Like if you just start explaining the weakest link, within 2 seconds, everyone goes, but I'm not listening.
Apart from Ramesh, who goes, I'll do it.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? Nice to see him. Yeah. But you think Robbie's...
I think maybe he could take his foot off the pedal on some of the shows that I'm not on. But if anything that affects me financially, he should carry on.
He does do a lot, though. He's sort of got a touch of the Xander about him.
I think it's strange because they've got very different backgrounds.
But yeah, Pointless. So we literally did a run-through for the BBC, and I always make the producers play the presenters because some companies hire in presenters to do run-throughs, but the producers know if there's any hidden little problem with the show, or they know if a certain thing happens, the run-through's going to be great, then they can make that happen. So I played me. A guy called Tom Blakeson, who now does The Wheel with Michael McIntyre, played Xander.
Was there someone who was in your head to be in this role?
No, there wasn't actually, which was the interesting thing. So they liked it. They said, listen, let's do it. And then Tom Blakeson himself came up to my desk and just said, the BBC has said, we're looking for someone like you. Would you be interested in doing it?
It's been such a weird moment in your life.
It was lovely. And I thought, I've never, ever wanted to be on telly. Ever. It just wasn't. I really loved my job. I loved being behind the scenes. I loved being in the gallery.
Yeah.
Because there's always miniature heroes and celebrations being passed around and people make you
a cup
of tea.
I thought you were genuinely meaning that. Like, the director's a miniature hero.
Yeah, but everyone's
the script supervisor.
Every hero's miniature. I felt like Alex Brooker and Mel B there. Yeah, great, Josh. But I've got a really good miniature hero joke.
I've got one.
Let's not let that slip.
But we're going to edit into that. You're going to be like Lee Max speed getting into it. So I didn't. But, you know, it wasn't something I was interested in. But I thought, I'll do it because most shows fail. You do stuff and you put it out there. And I liked the show, but I didn't think it was anything, like, unbelievable. And then they got Xander to do it as well. But I thought, I'll do a series of it. And, 12 years later, I was sort of still doing it. But, I didn't seek it out.
And what did your kids think when you said, I'm going to be on TV?
I think they sort of thought, again, because it was quite low impact. Yeah. It was on, like, BBC Two at sort of 2:30 in the afternoon or something, the first series.
It's weird that daytime TV, because if that's the only thing you do, you're massively known to a very small percentage and then obviously moved schedules.
To BBC One and that. But the interesting thing is now, because terrestrial TV, as we know, is in a fairly terminal decline, but the ratings of daytime TV is not in a terminal decline. Mm. So actually, daytime TV is getting bigger and bigger and bigger as a sport in comparison to normal entertainment shows.
Yeah.
Suddenly, you know, daytime TV is sort of this behemoth. You're okay, you're doing podcasts. You
know? I think we'll be all right.
Yeah. You've already pivoted away from terrestrial TV, which is what people have to do.
And so then Pointless kind of blew up. It kind of blew up around the same time we were getting on TV.
Yeah.
We were on a lot of the same kind of panel shows and stuff. Because I remember you coming to Edinburgh with your kids and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, you brought your son to see me.
Yeah.
And did they? Or something.
They saw all sorts, which is great.
Did you get to take them to loads of... Do you get lots of perks from that kind of
situation? No, not really. Well, the interesting thing was that I always took the kids to Edinburgh from when they were kind of 7 or 8.
Yeah.
And if you've got kids at home, other than the expense, it's much more expensive now. But there's so much good stuff there. And you suddenly realise, oh, that's what the street theatre is for as well.
Yeah.
Because you're sort of trying to walk up and down, you know, the Royal Mile. And the kids are going, right, I'm so sorry, but there's somebody on a unicycle and they're juggling fire. Dad, I think this might be the best thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Oh, and he's saying stuff to the crowd. He just pulled a guy out of the crowd and he has put a lit torch in the guy's mouth. I have... Listen, all I've seen in my life is Teletubbies. I'm now seeing this. My mind is blown. Anyway, we'd always take him there. Like, we went 1 year, and my son must have been 6 or 7, and we went to see the amazing Bubble Man. And he got my son up on stage, and he put my son inside a bubble. You know, good luck, David O'Doherty, beating that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I take them every year, and then as they get a bit older, there's certain comics you can take them to see, which is certain comics you know are going to be
Chubby Brown.
A little bit cleaner.
Yeah,
Chubby Brown. And then, as they got sort of 15 or so, they could go and see anyone. The Fame thing wasn't good, but having been a producer for so many years and knowing loads of the comics, you know they're not going to pick on you.
Yeah, of course.
That's the best thing. You know, if you turn up a tiny bit late and you sit on the end of it, no one's going to mind. So that's the lovely thing. So they've always been quite involved in the comedy community and they know people. No, it's great. And another great thing about kids getting older is you watch better stuff, right?
Yeah.
There's better TV, better films, and you can just go and see great comics with your kids. And that's, my kids are both, neither of them love sport.
Oh, really?
It's always been a disappointment.
That must be weird for you.
But they both love comedy.
Yeah, you go one way or the other.
I take that, and that'll do me. So, yeah, we've always had fun. They've been to see both of you boys in their teenage years. They have a favourite?
Oh, no.
No, I don't know.
And that man is the Bubble Man.
They still love him.
I feel like you're quite a cool dad in that sense.
I mean, cool would be pushing it, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, he's coming from Josh Widdicombe, though. So
that's true. Yeah, you live in London, is that right? I can't believe it. I've seen him. He's got a car, this guy. I've seen him driving down the road.
Do you know what? It's good you didn't do the voices for your book.
Yeah, I'm not cool now.
No, do you like go to them? You should watch this, or you like...
Yeah, it was great to sort of introduce them to things, but I never sort of introduced them in that way of saying, oh, this is like some of the comedy canon. You must watch this because it's really important. What I did was thinking, this is a great opportunity for me to be able to watch something that I like.
Yeah.
You know, I always remember the show that was absolutely in the sweet spot as they were getting a little bit older and was TV Burp.
Oh, so good.
And you were just thinking, I'm watching brilliant comedy, genuinely brilliantly crafted comedy. They are absolutely loving it.
Yeah.
It's rare that a show like that
good
comes
at the moment. Stephen Mulhern's In for a Penny.
Oh, I bet it is.
On ITV. That's
What's
so
that?
Good. He basically hangs around like piers or shops or busy high streets and gets random people in the street and goes like, right, if you do this challenge, I'll give you a tenner or 20 quid. And it'll be like trying to stack up 1p's on your arm and catch them. Silly little games like that. And then he absolutely mugs them off. Like, he just come over and go, you're right, you've been on holiday? And then someone's like, fake turn like up and just ruins them. And just so, he's actually quite mean, but he's so charming.
He's good, he's very
charming. Really good, and the kids love that.
I was going to say, but that's the thing, if you can watch something your kids are laughing as well, you think, Harry Hill, God bless you. Thank you so much.
Harry's one of the best.
Thank you for everything that you did.
Well, your kids getting older and stuff like that, I know you said, like, it gets easier because there's not as much. I mean, personally, if my 7-year-old could drive, I don't think I'd ever see her. She's absolutely fine on her own.
She'll just give you lifts as well.
Yeah, exactly. But as I've got older, I've had to come to you with, like, for, like, advice, but, like, grown-up life advice as opposed to, like, teenage stuff. Because I want to ask you about this as well, but, like, you're very measured and present, and it feels like you maybe got your head right before any TV or Fame came, and you knew exactly who you were and exactly how you operate under most stresses.
Yeah,
and before you add any sort of attention.
I think I'm quite good at work advice because I knew how to build a career, and my daughter, who's slightly older and slightly further advanced in her career, and she's going through interesting things. Like, she was negotiating a pay rise. She was like, I feel like maybe I should ask, but I don't know how. So yeah. That to me is like, great. I sat down for half an hour and said, well, this is how you ask. It's the easiest thing in the world.
How do you do that, by the way?
How do you ask for a pay rise? Yeah. I mean, listen, who's your agent? Remind me.
Well, they've done it for me. Yeah. I just thought, like, I never...
If you worked in, like, a normal job and had to go to your boss to ask for a pay rise...
Do you know what I was terrible at? When I was doing 10-minute spots and people would go, you do the 10-minute spot, you smash it. That bit, obviously, that was fine. And then you ask for 20-minute. Yeah. I would never be able to ask... For the 20. I'd never get me back and I'll open this. I'd go, yeah, I'll do another 10 minutes. Yeah, in 6 months' time. Great.
It's tricky. But money, I always thought, and again, it's something I wasn't born with, but you learn. The first time I really worked it out, firstly, I wanted to leave the company I was with. It's a terrible, terrible place. But at the same time, I didn't want to upset them.
Yeah. Right?
So I had an offer from Hattrick, which is one of the big comedy companies. Yeah. And let's say the offer was 25 grand or whatever it was at the time. So I had to leave this company. I said, here's the problem. Hattrick have offered me 40 grand. So I want to stay, but I can't. I have to go. And they went, oh, we'll give you 40 grand. You know, I thought, oh, will you? Oh, you know what? You get that quiet.
Yeah.
Do that. But when you're talking to someone from HR or wherever it is, essentially they're going to leave that room with the money or you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? That's all. If you want an extra £1,000 a year, either you're going to walk out of the room with that £1,000 a year or they're going to walk out with that £1,000 a year. And they only have one job, which is to walk out with that £1,000 a year, right?
That's this feels like you're pitching one of your daytime TV shows.
Yeah. So,
right, okay. Now, I've got it, yeah.
We've got 14,
Sue Perkins
we've got 14
right?
boxes. Right? And so the key thing to remember is never anything personal. If you ask for too much, you will see a look in their eyes that says, oh, maybe I shouldn't have asked for that. But essentially... Their job is to not give it to you, but it's nothing personal. But at the same time, if you just say, well, then I might have to look elsewhere.
Yeah.
And then look in their eyes and just check that that's okay. Of course they're allowed to give you it.
Yeah.
They can't give it to everybody. That's the point. If everyone walked in and did the same thing, you wouldn't get the pay rise. But if it's just you.
Yeah.
You know? I bet you've got such a good phone contract. I bet you're one of those people.
I don't know, actually. Mobile phones are a slight mystery to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's always... I always make it their problem. That's how to get a pay rise.
And also, as well, your career, you've almost had, like, three careers, essentially, because you had the pointless years. It sounds like you were just drinking. Yeah.
We had... Can I just do a sidebar? There's a lovely wardrobe woman I work with called Sharon, and Sharon had someone to stay in her spare room. And the person who was staying in Sharon's spare room for, like, a month... Went up to another friend and said, is Sharon okay? And they're like, yeah, I think she's okay. I think she's all right. And they go, well, why? She said, well, I'm in a spare room and on her daily planner, like 6 days a week, it just says pointless. And and the other day, it says total wipeout.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, that is good.
But yeah, so...
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so this is what I love about you. I'm bigging him up, but he's still putting a great funny joke in the middle. You did Pointless those sort of 10 years of that, then you finished Pointless, and then the books have taken off, like, insanely. But actually, more interestingly, really, I think, is the beginnings of you. You went from sort of very sort of humble working-class beginnings to get yourself into Cambridge.
And then you
studied at Cambridge, then left Cambridge, and you didn't just have a couple of TV producer jobs. You worked up to be one of the head honchos at Endemol, which is a huge worldwide company. Your story before Pointless and the books was pretty remarkable, and how you got there.
Remarkable is one of the companies.
That is one of the companies. Yeah, it is one of the companies. Yeah, I sort of felt that by the age of 40, I that's the bit of my career I'm proudest of in some ways, because I've built this thing and I sort of thought that was my life's work. So everything afterwards, it's been a weird sort of series of twists afterwards. But yeah, I love telly, and so it's one of those things where I walked into an industry where not a huge amount of people did love telly. There was lots of sort of public school kids who got jobs because they knew people and they didn't really watch what normal people watch, and I did, always did do. And so it was sort of, I mean, easy is not the right word, but I was pushing an open door.
Yeah.
Because I knew what I loved to watch. I love thinking of ideas. I sort of roughly know what people will like to watch, because if I like it, then other people do. And I had lots and lots and lots of failures, of course. But it was a great career, and those were the glory days of independent TV as well, the 90s and the 2000s, where there was money sloshing about. Everything was sort of well-funded. If you had a big hit show around the world, you could really, really make money. You know, Millionaire and Big Brother and Weakest Link and these shows could really, really make money, which is not the case anymore. So, yeah, I think I was lucky to be interested in something that was really monetizable and just... Mm. I never had to sort of go, no, I'm going to do an extra 2 hours because I really want to make money. I did another 2 hours because you're sitting in a recording studio, right? And it's fun to make telly.
And what stage of your career when your kids arrive? Because obviously that is a big, stressful, busy job. And then, boom, there's two kids, two under two almost.
Yeah, exactly. Funny enough, I was at Hattrick. I had a panel show called If I Ruled the World, Clive Anderson.
Yeah.
And I'd just done a sitcom called Boys Unlimited with James Corden. So I just had those two things at the same time. So I was starting to make money for the first time ever. So the kids arrived just then. So really financially,
the pressure
sort of happened at quite a good time. And TV was probably, you didn't have to work quite as hard.
You got that extra grand, you were on 12 grand a year.
Yeah, I was on 12 grand, which is 12 and a half because I'm a negotiator. So yeah, it was one of those things. I'd never, ever, ever had money. But also you could buy a house back in those days.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. We bought our first house for 140 grand and it was a nice two-bed kind of, but it was like, you could buy it, you know? I have no idea how people are buying houses anymore.
Yeah.
I certainly couldn't have done. But yeah, so they came along at, I was like 27, so none of my friends were having kids.
Yeah.
What was that like socially?
Yeah, I would rather my friends were having kids at the same time.
Yeah.
I would
say
that because it sort of shares the burden, but that's why people encourage you to have kids.
Yeah.
If anyone's out there thinking, I don't know if I should have kids, and all their friends go, do you know what? I think it would really complete you. I think you'd make a great dad. You know, what they're essentially saying
is, your life needs.
My life is hell.
Yeah, come and join me.
Come and join me on the lifeboat. All I need is company.
I need people in the trenches with me.
Exactly. Yeah. I need someone I can drop my kid off every now and again. Yeah. Just because they've gotten so well, don't they, our kids? Not really.
Not as well as us, but we have to put up with it because we're mates.
We went to see Barbie the other day, and you know when you see someone's facial expression, it brings everything back. So we go to see Barbie, and this woman with her daughter, and then this dad comes along with his daughter, and the daughters know each other, and they've gone, hey, hey, hey. And the guy's going, so yeah, I'll come back in, like, what, sort of 2.5 hours or something. She's going, oh, I'll take them for lunch afterwards as well. And he's going, oh, great, so maybe I'll come back at, like, 4-ish or something, pick them up. And the mum's going, yeah, yeah. And the dad's going, okay. But the look on his face was like, sweet freedom.
Oh, I managed it.
Oh, oh, my God.
4 o'clock, yeah, 4:35-ish.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, weirdly enough, I've got her overnight bag if she wasn't asleep over.
But I remember that feeling so well. You think, oh, you're going to take charge. Oh, great. So you take responsibility for my kids for a little bit. Oh, my God, and have a sleep.
We're at the stage now, where, and Josh is a little bit behind because he's got the younger ones, but they're becoming like sleepovers, friends coming over, and then also the, she said this, he did that, all that stuff. It's like complete bollocks, but it means a lot to them at that point. How did you, because you're very matter of fact and very chilled and stuff like that. Did you just sort of ignore it and let them get on with it? Or was you?
No, you have to, it's so important to them. It's their whole world. What someone said at school, it's like if you've just done a show and someone was horrible to you.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really...
Hang on, let me try.
Yeah.
I think I've done it.
See, one was just bullying you.
Okay.
But, you know, it's incredibly important. Your career is important, right?
Yes.
Yeah. If you're thinking, oh, we've got to do this tour, but actually, I want to do these venues, not these venues, and actually, if there's any way we can get the prices, and it's a huge thing for you, and you're ringing an agent, and you're talking to your mates. I mean, that's meaningless as well.
Yeah.
It's just, you are you in this moment, and they are them in that moment. And so the thing that just happened at school is incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
So you just have to listen.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do. And very rarely give advice because, you know...
You can't solve it for them.
You can never solve it. Also, the answer is, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Almost always. Because the answer to any of your problems is, it doesn't matter, usually. And when there is a big problem, then you know it's a big problem and you deal with it together. But yeah, most of things that happen to all of us are just... We're obsessed with our own lives, right? And kids are just massive narcissists.
Yeah.
Because they don't know any better.
And that's the only thing that's going on is they're like, they haven't got anything else to plan or worry about. All people are sort of ruled by their own ego of like, well, they said that and I shouldn't say that to me.
Yeah.
Even grown-ups hear them and go, well, it's just principle of it. The principle of it.
But it's like, if you know, when you're your age and you're going, I can't believe that Declan Rice did this, and you know, I don't know why he's playing at the centre of the midfield. He should be doing that. And that's because you know who Declan Rice is. But all they know are their teachers and the other kids in their class. And like, occasionally there'll be like a kid in the year above and they'll be like, this kid in the, who was literally the most famous person in the world to your kid.
Yeah. Like, I remember we was going famous. On holiday, there was a guy, oh my God, it's so and so from year six and then like year three and one. And I was like, oh, and I go, well, go and say hello. And like, oh, I can't say hello. They're older.
No. But it's like Brad Pitt's just walked in. You know, you'd still be a bit, oh, I can't go and say, But it's like that for kids, isn't it? Their idea of fame.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're a fan of McFly, aren't you?
Yeah, very much so. And McBusted.
Was that through your kids?
No. is the truth.
Okay.
No, I think they are genuinely brilliant songwriters. I think they're very talented boys.
Which, both of them are McFly.
McFly and Busted.
James Bourne from
James
Busted.
James Bourne, who is a brilliant songwriter. Yeah, yeah. Matt Willis, Charlie Simpson, they're all great songwriters. Yeah, yeah. Like all those boys, whenever they do a reality show, Tom Fletcher,
yeah,
Harry Judd, Dougie, Danny, they always turn up and do it, yeah, properly. Right? They are class acts, yeah, all of them. Their music is great. I think it always has been. They know how to write songs. Yeah, I love McFly. I once took the kids to see McFly up in Leicester Square. There was a Saturday morning show called TMI.
Yeah, I remember it.
And it was Sam and Mark and lovely Caroline Flack, who I knew and I'd been working with, so she invited us along. And McFly were on. And you can still hear, I saw a clip of it years ago. They play, and then I think it's Dougie Pointer drops his trousers to show his boxer shorts. And all you hear is my boy, who's about 6 years old, going, "Oh my goodness." You know, and they got to be on telly, actually. There was a game they used to play.
Oh, really?
Where they, yeah, so they got to be on telly. So, you know, that sort of thing's fun. No, I love McFly, but certainly that comes from me, not from them.
That's your special power. As you said with TV, is that there's loads of people in these industries that have a kind of disregard for popular, yeah, TV, yeah, popular music, and a sniffy, and they'll maybe go, "I'll make this show that these other people,
yeah,
will enjoy."
Exactly.
But you've got popular tastes, yeah, in television and in, yeah, books as well. And when you start your pop punk band,
yeah,
in music as well, do you think that is one of the things that's helped with your success?
Because, yeah, you can't ever do anything cynically, is the truth. One, yeah, of the lovely things about being a stand-up, by and large, when you really, really make it is when you've got your voice, right? And Rob, yeah, you had yours very, very early on. You came almost fully formed, which is interesting. Josh, I saw less of your very early work. Yeah. But when you really go, "Oh no, hold on, I'm being myself, but also, yeah, I'm coming at an, yeah, angle," and suddenly the material flows, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it comes from a place of truth. You're not having to go, "Oh, but what would be a joke about that? Yeah. What's, yeah, funny I could say about that?" If you just go, "This is something that I think..."
Well, Not the Week, for example, I literally didn't really know much or care.
Yeah, yeah.
As you get older, you get more into politics, and they were talking about like austerity and all that, and I genuinely thought he was a French politician, and that was like a joke on it and stuff, but I was thought what gave me an angle was I was just, yeah, brutally being, well, yeah, this is what I think of this. But sometimes you're under pressure to go, "Oh God, maybe I should have an opinion on it, like,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
the other guys have."
I vividly remember one where it was small ads.
Oh, right.
I don't remember what my one was, but I remember thinking, "I have to get down first because everyone's going to, yeah, do, yeah, this." And I remember you were on it, and I remember racing down to do the first one.
It makes me itchy.
It being met with silence like you've never heard.
Wow.
You know, like floating through space.
Yeah.
Oh. And then I just remember walking back, and I vividly remember looking at you and you just pissing yourself laughing.
And now look at you both.
No.
That's the only round on that show I could do, because that's a writer's round.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? And a performer's like Hugh, what they expect
you to do.
Hugh could do
all of them.
Hugh could do a one man play,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
from one line, and then
I've got nothing. I'm like, yeah, you doing your audiobook.
But yeah, you could do that show on both sides easily.
They asked me on What the Week, actually. But that to me is a performer show. Yeah. That isn't a show where you can just come on as a civilian, which is what I am.
Mm. Thank you so much for coming on, Richard.
Pleasure.
Good luck with your next book.
14th of September.
Yes, 14th of September, The Last Devil to Die. I think it's good. I think
Thursday Murder Club.
Where would you rank it in the Thursday Murder Clubs?
Chronologically, I would rank it fourth.
Yeah. Yeah. As no, traditionalists.
People,
like,
by and large, like them more and more as they go on, but I think sometimes that's because they like the characters. It's like with TV shows, you go, "Oh, it really hit its stride in series,
yeah, yeah,
three."
Yeah.
No, you just, you're working,
well,
out.
I mean, they trust the characters now, so you can,
exactly,
set up, we'll get on with it.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you're allowed to say, are you going to keep doing them? How does it work?
Yeah, I'm doing a new series now, so I've just started, yeah, a brand new one.
Totally different to these.
Totally
ones.
Different.
About a wizard's still, child.
Yeah,
but a wizard.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're going
to
like it.
Yeah, about a little hairy beast that lives, yeah, in the woods.
Exactly. No, it's about Julia Donaldson's tiny house. So I've got a brand new series, but I'm going to do some more Thursday Murder Clubs as,
amazing,
well. They're not finished, but I'm having a year doing something else.
Lovely.
Nice.
Lovely. What point with the Thursday Murder Club, what point did you go, "Oh my God, this is something else now"?
It started big, which was good, but I slightly think, oh, maybe it will because I'm on telly and,
yeah,
over here. So maybe, but it started bigger than we thought. Did well for about 4 or 5 weeks, and then it started going even further up, which was amazing. And then it got to Christmas and it went absolutely bananas. I mean, mental, which was really lovely. And, you know, from the world I'm from, I know what a hit is and I know what a flop,
yeah,
is, because I've had both. And so that's when I thought, oh, okay, this is...
We're in it.
There's something...
We're in it.
Yeah, and it's selling in America and Germany and all,
yeah,
these... So I thought, oh, okay, which is obviously they don't know who I am. So almost, I mean, within a month,
Yeah.
I thought, oh, okay, this is going to be a fun ride.
There is a final question we end on.
Yes.
But it's more about, because you're separated from the mother of your kids.
Yes.
But the question's normally about the best things they do parenting and the worst, but I don't know if you're open for that, Jack.
It doesn't seem appropriate. <mate. laughs>
Fair enough. Thank you very much, Richard.
Best ending we've ever had in a while.
That was Richard Osman. See you Tuesday.
Do you not want to talk about Richard Osman and what a great...
I love Richard Osman, but Rob, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
I'm doing the 16-8 and I'm 25 minutes from being able to eat again.
That's why you're so grouchy.
I'm not grouchy.
You are. You're not right. I knew it was something. You're doing six. You don't need to lose weight.
No, it's a health thing as well. It's a health thing as well.
What?
Well, I'll tell... Do you know what, Rob?
Yeah.
I'll tell you about this on Tuesday.
Tell me about your health thing on Tuesday. And let's just say, go and buy Richard Osman's bloody book.
Because he bloody needs it.
Actually, tell you what, let's do reverse promo. Don't buy his book. Everyone's buying it. Buy ours. A class act, Parent in Hell, and Neighbours Twice a Day. Buy them.
Do it.
And why not Da Vinci Code?
Yeah, fuck
it's a good one, isn't it? Right, see you later.
Bye.